Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. The show tapes live most Thursdays on YouTube, 5:30 p.m. Pacific. Check my Twitter feed, ActionZaku, for more. Hope you enjoy the show.
Everybody, welcome to AnCast. As you may be able to tell, I am not Zach Birchie. It's your old buddy Jacob here to run the podcast because Zach is not familiar with the topic of our discussion today, which is Danganronpa. Not just the anime, not just the first game, but just the whole enchilada, because it has not necessarily come to a close, but I think, as we'll get into, spoilers is going to be a heavy spoiler cast, a very distinct conclusion point, I guess, a wrap-up point for the franchise as we know it. Who knows what it'll become in the future. And so with me, I have Sam, longtime fan of the show, a big fan of Danganronpa. How you doing, Sam?
I'm doing pretty all right. Yeah.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Our very special guest here today is Oren. He is, I guess you could say, introduced Danganronpa to the English-speaking world, one of the first prominent translators of the material, and the way that he presented it to English-speaking audiences is a little bit infamous, actually. So, very excited to have him on. Oren, how are you doing, man?
Thank you. I'm good. I'm in Tokyo. And people tell me I should never do that, but I always do anyway. I apologize for my accent, because I'm obviously not a native English speaker. And I really hate my accent, so I always apologize for it.
No worries, man. You sound fine. Just fine. Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm in Tokyo. It's rainy here. We're having a typhoon coming next week. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, it's great.
Awesome. Cool. I'm going to start by asking everybody how you came into the franchise, how you were introduced to it, and what was your initial impressions of it the first time that you saw Danganronpa, either the game or the first anime, or however you were introduced to it. And let's start with Oren.
Sure. So back in 2010, I lived in Kyoto. I was a student there, and I just bought a used PSP because I wanted to play more games. And I saw this ad in game stores about a new game coming out. It looked pretty cool. I bought it the day it came out, and played it and really, really liked it. Liked it enough to actually tweet the writer of the game, telling him how much I liked it, and he tweeted back. I was apparently the first foreigner who said anything about this game to him.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And about a year later, I was back in my home country, and I wanted to keep up with my Japanese, and I was also a member of the Something Awful forums, where there was a very active Let's Play forum, and I decided to pretty much translate the game and make a thread and translate it for other people. And that became really, really popular very, very fast. And also got me much more involved with the series. And, you know, when you actually translate something, you became a much bigger fan of it, too. Mm. So, yeah. And then I played 2 and read the book that was never translated officially into English, Danganronpa 0. And played the rest of the games, and eventually I also went back to live in Japan. So I've been to fan events, and I've been to the stage plays that they made of the first 2 games. And
wow,
yeah,
and yeah,
neat. Well, that's definitely a very unique. I mean, hearing from the creator that this is like the first foreign fan that he's heard from, like that must be a pretty big deal. So you've been pretty firmly entrenched in Danganronpa, like you know, since the day it came out, which is really really neat. So you mentioned the Something Awful thing, and I think that is – there aren't a whole lot of back in the day, I want to say. What year was it that you started doing this Let's Play compared to the year that it actually came out in English from NAS America?
So I started my Let's Play at the end of 2011. That's pretty much almost exactly 1 year after the game originally came out. I'm not sure what year the Vita version came out in the United States. Do you
2014.
It was about 2014. It was much later.
So yeah, so it was like 3 years earlier, I guess. And the Let's Play took about a year to complete.
Well, it's a lot of text. I mean, that game is almost entirely reading.
Yeah, and also, so, for people who don't really know something awful from at the time, Let's Plays weren't exclusively video at that time. So my thread was actually a screenshot Let's Play. We had a thread where there were lots and lots of screenshots of the game with translated text under them. So.
Yeah, back in the day, I think that's how fans also did it for Fate's Day Night and like Tsukihime. A lot of the Nasu sort of works is that it would just be a giant, forum post with pictures of the game and their translations underneath them. And it was sort of an old school way to do it, but it works for what it is. And like you mentioned, that was I wasn't in tune with that at the time. I wouldn't come into Danganronpa until years later, but I. Heard about that just as a goon, as somebody who visits the Something Awful forums. The colloquial name for that is goon, because it was a little bit of I want to say a fiasco, because a fiasco implies that something bad funny is happening, and this was good funny, but there were a lot of basically people who came into Danganronpa fandom who were really fascinated with this Let's Play and didn't know about the paywall that exists on those forums, which is to say, in order for Something Awful to keep running, as long as it has, it's a very old forum. There's a paywall. You can't just browse the forums endlessly. Eventually, you have to pay like $5 for a membership, which is not that much. It's a one-time $5 thing. But a lot of 14-year-olds, 15-year-olds, teenagers who were browsing on this didn't necessarily want to pay the $5. So there was like an outcry. There were like sock puppet accounts that like 10 people were using, and the low tax guy who runs Something Awful got pretty mad about it and like banned a bunch of people. And it was definitely an issue caused by just how popular this Danganronpa Let's Play was. So I wanted, Oren, from your perspective, what was it like, all that stuff going down? Did you just sort of like try to stay out of it, or do your best job regardless?
Yeah, I did start to try to stay out of it. I should say that Something Awful is usually You pay for the right to post. You can usually read it for free. But Lotax did put an option there to like block forums for a period of time so that you can't see them if you didn't pay. So I think when the thread started getting really, really popular, he caught on to it and he started blocking the Let's Play forum much more often than he usually does. Mm-hmm. So then there were periods of time where people just couldn't read the thread. Let alone post. If you really want to hear from someone who really suffered at the time, you should talk to Slowbeef, who was moderating the forum back then.
Right.
Yeah, and he actually has a whole saga with Danganronpa. He really loved it when it first started, and then just because the moderation problem it caused, he came to really dislike the series, and now he's actually coming back to it, I think.
Right.
I should also mention that I wasn't the only fan translation of the game. There was also an actual patch coming out from a different group. And they had a misfortune. Their patch came out just as I was finishing my translation. And I think it actually came out like a week before they announced they were translating officially. Mm-hmm. So they had to take out, they came out and a week later they had to take it down because the official translation was announced.
So, oh, geez, yeah.
Huh. Yeah.
So, let's make sure that. All right. You basically, your perspective is having gotten in on the ground floor of Danganronpa before it was this huge thing as it is now. I would say it started to become a huge thing in like maybe 2013 when we got the anime version. But prior to that, it wasn't. You kind of had to be in that deep level of like, oh, I'm looking up fan translations to even know about this thing. But I wanted your perspective in Japan. What was the fandom like for the game? Did it take a while for people to really come around to it, for it to become a thing, or was it like an instant hit?
So the way I understand it, I read a couple of interviews with the creators about it. It was the first week it came out. It was obviously like a new franchise from unknown creators, so. It did take a while. It didn't make do a lot of money the very first week, but the way I understand it, there was a very, very good word of mouth about it, and in like 2 or 3 months, it just grew more and more in sales and became really, really popular. I think the creator even said that like game store owners really, really liked the game and kept giving it like prime shelf space. So it kept being popular even 2 or 3 months later, which was just around the end of the year where Christmas and everything, game sales were very important. So I think in like about 3 or 4 months, Spike realized, at the time it was just Spike, it wasn't Spike Chun Software, it was before the merger, realized they had something really good on their hands and really, really started putting more resources into advertising it and making Monokuma like a company mascot and everything.
Right. Right, cool. So, so Sam, I wanted to ask from your perspective, how did you first come into the franchise, first come into Danganronpa, and what was your first impression upon playing it
or watching it? Yeah, so actually, my story starts a little bit later. It starts when the anime was coming out. I got a message from like a friend in high school that was like, "Hey, you should check out this Danganronpa thing." And I knew that there was both a game and an anime, but I watched the anime first. I watched like a couple of episodes of it. I don't know, maybe like 4 or 5, which gets up to about case 2. But then I was curious about the game, and I knew there was a finished fan translation. I had nothing about the Something Awful thread at the time. So basically, I just played that PSP fan translation, and I thought that was way better than the anime. And from there, it just continued to spiral, and I was a fan of the franchise ever since.
Right. Yeah, that is very similar to my own experience. From my end, I was this was before I was working full time for ANN, and back when I was just doing a little more freelance work. But I had realized that the previous anime review sort of format that I had done, which was all older series, was released. I was like, okay, everything's moving into streaming. This was 2013, and I was like, well, I need to be keeping up with streaming shows. And so I think one of the first or second seasons where I was like sort of keeping up with as much as I could streaming and trying to commentate on it while I was in sort of transition into working for ANN full-time was Danganronpa. And I didn't really know that it was based on a visual novel. I was just like, oh, okay, well, this is interesting. I think it's an adaptation of something else. But I was immediately captured, I guess, struck by the art style, because it just didn't look like anything else that I had seen before. It was just like this weird sort of anime meets pop art aesthetic. And as I watched the show, as it continued, I realized, well, I don't really like the show so much, like, because it seems rushed and it's hard to connect these characters, and the animation doesn't look like it can. I was immediately struck by how much it looked like the animation could not keep up with the art. And I was like, I think these designs were not necessarily meant to be animated this way. So, but I just sort of kept it in the back of my head. I didn't even really remember how it ended. I was just like, oh, that's kind of neat, I guess. But when I heard that NIS was releasing the game proper in 2014... or so, I was like, well, I really want to take a look at that, because I'm curious how it employed these designs, you know, outside of the strictures of, I think, Studio Lurch maybe was the one who animated that the series. I was like, I want to know how these were originally done in context, and I was blown away. I was immediately hooked by the game. I thought it was just extraordinarily well done and really fascinating, and, like, you know, the anime wasn't able to incorporate... It tried, but it wasn't able to incorporate just sort of the thrill that you get from actually shooting down people's statements and, like, constructing the manga out of a murder scene and stuff like that. It was just really captivating. And so I was like, oh, this is great. And immediately, what I want to transition into talking about is, I think a lot of people like Danganronpa 1 for the cases and for the setup and for the way that it looks and the aesthetic, but I think I don't think it would have captured the imagination of people as much if it weren't for two factors, who are secretly one factor. Again, we said this is going to be a spoiler cast, but which is Monokuma and Junko Enoshima, who I think are some of the most memorable villains in not just sort of an anime thing, but in pop culture. I would say stand out as some of the most memorable villain forces, and they aren't necessarily the same character. in the ways that they express themselves either. So they sort of stand apart as like this one game created these two great villainous icons. And so I wanted to ask, what was your reaction to the big twist of Danganronpa, which is a classic twin switcheroo? It's a big middle finger. It's a big fuck you to the whole idea that you can't have a twin replacement trick in a murder mystery. That's an old rule of murder mysteries. It's no twins. And so this, Danganronpa always likes to break the rules. So, Junko Inoshima was born, I guess, out of that, out of a desire to subvert that twist and make it into something interesting. And so I wanted to ask, what was your impression of the twist in Danganronpa and the reveal of Monokuma and Junko, yourselves, I guess. And Sam, we can start with you.
Okay, sure. So I actually had it spoiled that Junko was the villain of the game. Or at least I knew that she was still, like, there were two of her. Mm-hmm. And that made me immediately suspicious of everything, like, after a certain point. Like, I got spoiled, like, halfway through the game.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, just before they started getting into that already. But, yeah, so my reaction, like, when I saw it all play out, though, it didn't really lessen it at all, because she was a really interesting, like... But she was psychotic. She was she's very different from what like you would expect, like a villain of something for this to be. Usually, they're more like ominous or like terrifying. But with Junko,
first shows up and she's doing that Ojo-sama thing. She's doing like the first thing that she shows everyone is this. She's literally wearing a crown and she's doing the oh-ho-ho and, you know, this ridiculous sort of caricature. And you're like, oh, that's the character. And I remember playing the game thinking, oh, that's the character. That's kind of a disappointment. And then it changes on you.
Yeah,
and you're like, wait a minute.
She just
and then it's Dio. And then, you know.
She jumps from personality to personality while constantly she's like wearing glasses and she's like a teacher. She's it's a weird level of insanity that I haven't seen from like something like this before. Mm-hmm. And as such, it made it immediately memorable.
Yeah, definitely. And Oren, what about you? Because you obviously wouldn't have had the opportunity to have anybody spoil it for you.
Yeah,
because you got this game on.
Exactly. I was lucky enough to play it before there were any spoilers around. And it's really, really hard to play it nowadays without getting spoiled, I think. Like, Junko is everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Like, especially in cosplay and on memes, and it's crazy. I was also... I mean, obviously the game wants you to realize who the villain is before the actual reveal. I think by the time you start Chapter 6 of the game, you should have some suspicions already. But the actual reveal is great. I mean, the first when she first appears with the crown and she immediately makes a Dragon Quest reference. I don't know if any of you got that, but her line is.
I'm not sure it was maintained in translation. She makes a lot of references, but I'm sure not every single one.
I think it is, but I think it's much more or less obvious in the West, just because it's a very famous line from the very first Dragon Quest when you get to the final boss of the game and he asks you if you want to. If you want the player to join him and in exchange for half of the land. And Junko basically repeats the sentence like verbatim. I really like the Japanese voice actress for Junko, who she does a really, really good job with the personality switching. I really, really like Junko. I also really like Monokuma, who... It's a voice acting thing. It's really striking Japanese because it's the very elderly voice actress who voiced Doraemon for many, many years. Mm-hmm. And for people who know Doraemon, especially Japanese people, I think, but even I who watched a fair bit of Doraemon when I was studying Japanese, it's pretty striking to hear the same voice coming from a very, very different character.
Yeah, a lot of people, like the comparison that you sort of give a lot of, I guess, American fans is like, well, imagine that like the classic voice of Mickey Mouse was playing like Jigsaw, is basically what you know, what it was like to hear Monokuma speak for Japanese fans. And infamously, Spike and Kodaka didn't really know whether they were going to be able to get her to do it, because it was such a sort of, like, irreverent idea, but she wanted to, and she was excited about it, so they just did it. And it has a very bizarre effect, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm wondering if any of you read the novel, Danganronpa Zero, that came after the first game?
I have not, but I think Sam has.
I haven't, actually.
That's kind of fortunate for English speakers, because I think that's the only part of the, like, canon original story that was never translated. And many people who read fan translations don't really like it, I think. I think it's a very difficult novel to translate just because of Kodaka's writing style. But it's unfortunate, because it's the only place where you get some, like, deeper into Junko's character. They never really repeat the information that's in there in 2 and the 3 anime.
It is my understanding that and we'll definitely get to Danganronpa 3, the anime, but it has a very different, I guess, take on Junko's character compared to from what I understand of Zero. The idea is that Junko did attempt to become sort of a happy, normal, well-adjusted person just by manually sort of brainwashing herself into being that way, and discovered that it really couldn't take. It's kind of like, this is a dumb reference, but it's kind of like there's a sequel to Disney's live-action 101 Dalmatians where they brainwash Cruella de Vil into being a nice person, and it just doesn't take. She can't be that way.
Yeah, that's not actually what's happening. Like, can I spoil Zero here? Do you mind?
Absolutely. Go ahead.
Okay, so basically, yeah, the protagonist of the novel turns out to be Junko in the end, a brainwashed Junko. She did brainwash herself, but the reason she did it is because she's obviously a despair addict, and she couldn't make her despair anymore. Like, things just weren't bad enough. So she brainwashed herself, so she could end up killing the person she loved and then realize it. And she wanted, like, and she thought that would actually, like, be a despair fix for her. The other thing that's revealed in this book is that actually Junko's real talent is that she's, like, a master. She can read people really well. Mm-hmm. So the way the book puts it, it's really like a superpower. So if she knows enough about a person, she can predict with like almost 100% accuracy what they're going to do. Mm-hmm. And that's actually how she orchestrated the first game. She knew what the characters would do in certain circumstances because she knew them.
And to jump forward to Danganronpa 3 just a little bit, that is definitely an aspect that they explore. So I didn't know about that about Zero. I thought that it was actually, I should have known, of course, that Junko would not make a sincere attempt to repair her psychoses, but that she would just try to find a way to make them even gnarlier. That is interesting. Hopefully maybe an official translation comes out at some point that people can read. But in Danganronpa 3... she sort of couches her fascination with despair in that, like, there's so many avenues for hope. There's so much, like, that you could be manipulated once you figure out what somebody's, like, I guess, I don't know, what somebody's aspiration is, what their beliefs are, that it's extremely easy to manipulate them, and that she had gotten bored with it as the ultimate analyst or mastermind or however you want to call it. It just became too easy to manipulate people who, have some kind of aspiration that you could take advantage of. But the fascinating thing to her with despair was that it was sort of, no matter who you were or how you thought, you always ended up at the same place. A despairing person, regardless of their personality or their original beliefs, kind of ends up at the same place over and over. And so she wanted to fully explore and exploit that, because it seemed more undefeatable to her. It seemed more, you know, impossible, which is interesting. You know, it's just weird. It's just not the kind of villain that you see anybody else write, because it's so cosmic. It's so larger than life.
Yeah, I think Kodaka famously said that he doesn't understand Junko himself, and that's why it's interesting to write her.
Yeah, definitely. So, What's the train of thought? So coming off of Danganronpa 1, what were your favorite aspects of it, whether that be the art or a specific character or a specific moment? And what captured your heart or your imagination about it most before the second one had come out? Just talking about that first game.
So I really liked pretty much everything about it from the very beginning, but I think the point that I transformed from being mildly impressed with the game to really loving it was the ending of the fourth case with Sakura and Aoi. I also think it's probably my favorite case in the entire series.
Oh, really?
Yeah, just because it's something you don't expect, especially from a character like Aoi, who has been really happy-go-lucky and positive character until that point. It's a very emotional ending to a case, and it makes you see that there's something deeper here than just being funny and extreme. And the writer actually tries to do something more with the story.
Yeah, it's more than just, I know that he was, Kodaka mentioned, being deeply inspired by, or at least largely inspired by, classic mystery stories, even anime ones like Detective Conan and stuff, and there are certainly references to Conan and other mystery writers in Danganronpa throughout, but it was interesting to me that all of the whodunits in Danganronpa, and I would say that this is maybe one of my favorite things about the franchise, along with the aesthetic and certain characters like Junko, is that it's never really just about figuring out the why and figuring out here's the exact mechanism through which a murder was accomplished. It's always about the deeper thing about human nature or about these characters that he's trying to say. This is evident in case two with talking about strength and real, that Chihiro was the strong one. And I think I got the name right. Chihiro, I think, is her name. Was the strong one. And Mondo was the weak character. And just exploring ideas like that. And my favorite thing about Case 4, you mentioned that, Aoi was and wasn't the murderer, as it were, was trying to take everybody down when Sakura was really trying to save everybody with her sacrifice. The thing that was fascinating to me about that was that it is possible to, quote-unquote, solve the case the wrong way by thinking too much like a classic fictional detective who's unraveling clues to a mystery, because that's what Byakuya does. He attempts to solve the mystery by saying this piece of evidence matches up with this, and he's not taking into account human messiness or motivations or basically human foibles that might cause it to go a different way. He's just trying to think about it as if everybody was robots or cogs in a machine that's causing this mystery to go a very specific way. And that's one of my favorite parts of game one, I would say, apart from the ending and everything that happens in the ending, is that speech that Kyoko gives to Byakuya, where she says, you had all the pieces to how this mystery would go, but you didn't take into account that humans aren't robots. They're not sequences of zeros and ones that you can put out an exact method to, but just because you have the evidence. You have to take into account people's emotions, the fact that they will fuck up, the fact that they'll do things that don't make sense, because what Aoi did not make sense. And that was my favorite part of it. That was just a really extraordinary way to take down, kind of subvert the idea of mystery writing. That it's not, you can't just take forensic evidence and have your perfect answer. It doesn't work that way, in real life, I guess. Not that Danganronpa is remotely realistic, but it was an interesting idea. Sam, what about you? Yeah.
For me, the biggest thing that I immediately thought was interesting was the characters and how they were written. They all had a weird kind of anime exterior, but they all have a more human, emotional core, when you start to throw them into this awful situation of murdering each other. And it's immediately apparent with Sayaka, because she, she's a peppy, normal, pop idol type character. I'm your ultimate assistant, and I'm going to help you, and we're going to get out of here. And then she, turns on you, and she tries to murder someone and blame it on you without any remorse whatsoever. and you
because you were easy because you believed in the stereotype, in the cliche, yeah, that this pop idol was going to be your love interest, your side character.
And it, yeah, exactly. Because of that, she was able to exploit you, and Danganronpa takes advantage of your preconceptions a lot, and not only in characters but just in like the story too. Mm-hmm. Metatextual levels, but it's through that the game continued to impress me more and more, like with the ending twists and how like you could figure out some things, but there was always like three other things behind it that were way more crazier, right, than you could ever expect.
What I like about I would say every entry in the Danganronpa series is that there's a twist. And that's the one that they, as Oren mentioned, like they kind of expect you to know leading into, because you couldn't beat the game if they didn't at least give you the ability to know what the twist was. But in chapter 6 of any Danganronpa game, there's also a meta twist, which maybe if you're very crafty, you figured it out. But a lot of the time, it's obscured very heavily from you, so it's not really possible, or it's much less likely. It's certainly possible, but. The twist, for instance, in Danganronpa 1 is that Junko was alive the whole time, there was a switcheroo, and she's the mastermind. That's the twist. That's what you're supposed to know. But the meta twist, the big one, that you're not necessarily, it's basically misdirection. It's like a magic trick misdirection. You spend all this time thinking about, oh, Junko is mastermind, I've got this, and once we know that, that'll be the end of it. You don't think about the potential of a mega twist, which is, do you really want to get out of the academy? Or is this like, is it better that you stay in? Because, in fact, the apocalypse is outside. Surprise! You spend all the time killing each other to escape into a hellscape, which is a fascinating, you know. And Danganronpa does this over and over, and I think that's another thing that brings people into the franchise, is because even when you solve all the mysteries, you're not going to be done. It's not going to be done with you. There's one that it deliberately kept from you because it was trying to focus all your energy on these other mysteries. And, you know, that's really interesting to me.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, so that brings us to the second game, which I want to I'm just going to say right now, I think in Western fandom, I don't know about Japanese fandom, I would be very curious to find out, is everyone's favorite. I have not really met anybody that didn't say that Danganronpa 2 Goodbye Despair was not their favorite game, had all their favorite characters. You know, even after now that V3 is out, V3, there's a lot of conversation surrounding it that I can't wait to get into, but I would say that most people settle on Danganronpa 2 as, I guess, their most beloved entry in the franchise. And so, Oren, I'm curious, what is your take on Danganronpa 2, and do you think that the Japanese side of it is similar to the English-speaking side?
I think it is similar. I think, the two characters are probably the most popular characters in the series, even among Japanese fandom. I think that you will see more people saying that V3 is a favorite game now, but it's a much more divisive game, so there will also be people,
right,
where it will be the least favorite game, probably.
Yeah, like before we even get into the spoilers on that one, yeah. I would say that V3 is the only one that I've seen outright hatred for. I have seen a lot of people love it, but nobody, even if you're like, it wasn't that fun, you don't like hate Ultra Despair Girls. I have seen people who hate V3, which is fascinating. But going back to 2 and what you were saying, Oren.
I played 2 again the day it came out in Japan. It was actually when I was translating the first game, right in the middle there. I liked it. I mean, the characters are great. I think they're designed to be they're more eccentric than the first game's characters. And that, I don't know if it makes them better characters, but it certainly makes them more memorable for the most part. And I really enjoyed it. I was really into Danganronpa at the time I played it for the first time because I was translating the first game. I read it like thinking about how I would translate certain aspects of it. It has a lot more stuff that are difficult to translate. Mm-hmm.
Have you seen the English translation for those games, the official one, and did you have any take on how they approached things? Or
I didn't, mostly by watching other people's videos. So I will say one thing about my translation. Lots of people like it, but obviously I am not a native English speaker, and I personally don't really like how it turned out, just because my approach to translation is not to be too literal and try to make it sound natural. And as a non-native English speaker, I don't think I did a very good job with it. I did translate about half of the second game, too. And I had an editor back then, like, rewriting my translation into more natural English. And I think that the first half of the second game that I translated is actually my favorite translation of that game. Nice America's translation is... I have a complicated feelings towards it. It's definitely good English, but they made a lot of choices that I don't necessarily agree with. It's not horrible by any means. It's a pretty good translation. I just wish they did some parts of it differently.
Yeah, well, the series especially, it's funny because you mentioned, like, there's a lot of video game references and mystery novel references in the first one that may get, or just even basic Japanese pop culture references that may get a little lost in translation in the first one. But the second one, like, triples that, I think. It is just loaded with especially video game references for, you know, pretty obvious reasons in retrospect, but at the time, you know, it was like, wow, it's every other line you have something to translate. So, you know, I think they had a kind of a monumental task ahead of them, and they did a pretty good job. It helps that they include the Japanese language track in the release, so you can hear exactly what they're saying and compare it, and if you know a little bit of Japanese, you can pick up, like, what they might have had to leave out and go, okay, that's what that was originally.
Without leaving the reference out, like, probably the thing I hate most about English is that they chose Ultimate as the title they give characters.
Right, that's a contentious choice. Yeah. Super high school level is what they went
for. The Japanese is literally super high school level, and it's supposed to sound ridiculous. It's not a serious title. And I think they kind of... they chose Ultimate, and then they had to scramble around in the next games because Ultra Despair Girls has... The what's called in Japanese, like, the super elementary school level kids.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, and then the three anime actually have every character in one of its parts is called former super high school level whatever. And mm-hmm. It doesn't really sound nice if you say former ultimate, because it sounds like mm-hmm. they lost their talent, but all it's trying to say is that they're no longer in high school, yeah. So I think the actual anime translation actually keeps the high school level. Is that right? Mm-hmm. I think so.
Yeah, they do. And it, depending on the translation, whether you're looking at Funimation's anime translation or NAIS America's game translation, sometimes it'll be different super high school level, or it'll be ultimate. But I think that fortunately that became such a, I guess, a well-known issue in fandom that people... react to it with pretty I know the difference, etc. So but maybe casual fans won't pick up on it, but then casual fans won't get deep enough into the story that they're seeing those variations like there are in Ultra Despair Girls and 3. So I don't think it turned into that much of a problem, but it's definitely a significant translation discrepancy.
Yeah, I just think I'm not sure why they did it. I also don't like that they took the super from Danganronpa 2 and the new from V3. I'm not sure why they removed those words from the titles, but yeah,
it happens. But just asking right now before we get into that aspect of the conversation, would you say that Danganronpa 2 is your favorite as well, or would you say that mantle has been passed on to V3 or one of the other spinoffs?
For me, it's definitely V3 right now.
Oh yeah,
yeah. I really like that game.
What about you?
I would say that my favorite is still 2. It definitely holds the strongest place in my heart. I might think that V3 is stronger in terms of writing, but just in terms of polish and everything. But I think 2, like, don't know, it had the most in it that I just think back on fondly.
Yeah, my favorite thing about 2, having played through it, was I was immediately struck by, you mentioned the eccentricity in the characters is a big step up, and it's they're all trying much harder. I guess we have characters like Nagito and Gundam and Sonya and Amikon, who are all just a little bit, like, can you turn it down a little bit? You don't actually want them to turn it down a little bit, but it seems, you know, it seems like a little much. And this becomes more illuminating when you discover the twist of the series, which is something that, playing the first game, I always wanted addressed, and this is why I think 2, I really responded strongly in a positive way to V3, but I'm more awed by and in respect of V3 than I am, like, personally, as personally affected by it as I was. It's very close. It's like 2, and then V3 is like just beneath it, and then 1 is like a little beneath that. But the thing that I really loved about 2 is that I think I always wanted that story to be told. I'd always wanted to hear about, you know, spoilers, the cast of Danganronpa 2 are Junko's minions, as it were. They are the remnants of despair. They are the ones who helped her carry out her plan for the most awful, most tragic event in human history. And having played the first game, I always kind of wanted to know that. I wanted to know. I was like, well, there was a mutiny within the school. There was a, you know, there were classrooms that were murdered en masse. There was a big, you know, it was a big, horrible to-do. And I wanted to know what had happened to those kids. And I never thought that that story would just straight up be told. And it was in 2. And unfortunately, to diminishing returns in 3, but I guess we'll get to that later. Mm-hmm. And so I was always really, really struck by that. And it had a lot of my favorite characters in the franchise as well, which is Fuyuhiko and Gundam and Nekomaru, and I liked all those characters a lot. So it was nice to see them, you know, I guess, get their full due, and then the reveal that they were villains, and it's like, you know, the most lovable characters were once, you know, these horrible mass murderers, and you kind of find it in your heart to, like, forgive them and see the full picture of who they were, and Hajime's struggle. Hajime at first starts boring, but that's kind of the point, and then when you find out what his struggle is, that he has the choice between being this boring person or, like, the horrible nihilist Frankenstein that he made himself into in order to be, quote-unquote, special, and he has those two choices ahead of him at the end, like, you know, it's really strong. And so I think that while V3 is a lot more clever and it gave me a lot more to think about and discuss, definitely, my emotions responded most strongly to 2.
Yeah, I definitely agree there. In general,
okay, so we're going to... Go ahead.
In general, I think 2 is a better game than 1 in pretty much every way. And
well, I would say that the games have only improved in terms of the three of them, in terms of mechanics and, like, ease of play and game feel. That definitely, the technologically, they've only improved.
They all build off of each other very well.
And I will say that, like, even though I think I like V3 as a game more than 2, Nagito is probably still my favorite character in the entire series. So.
All right, so let's actually talk about Nagito a little bit, because he is divisive. Like, so I understand. I find him fascinating. I understand why he's so popular. However, he really is unbelievably popular, especially in Japan. And so I wanted to ask Oren, what are your impressions of, like, why do you think Nagito is so popular with, like, fangirls, especially over there? And what strikes you about him? Because, look, he's interesting and all, but he's so maddening. He makes me so angry that I find it interesting that so many people find him sexy or whatever.
And he's creepy.
He makes me so angry. Yeah, right? So, yeah, Oren, what are your thoughts on Nagito as a character?
I guess he's just the kind of character that fangirls really are drawn to. I'm not sure why. I'm not a fangirl myself. I just really like him as a character. I think there's a little bit of meta in it, especially in Japan, because it's the same voice actress as Nagi in the first game, as Makoto in the first game.
Mm-hmm. They maintained that in the dub as well.
Yeah, but it's been advertised heavily as such in Japan. I think in English, you don't really... The voice actors aren't even credited in the English versions, if I'm not mistaken.
I believe that was true in V3? I'm not sure.
I think the Japanese VAs are credited in...
The Japanese voice actors are a very large part of the advertising for the game before its release. Mm-hmm. So we knew who was voicing Nagito. There's the fact that his name is an anagram of Makoto Nagi. There was a lot of speculation about it. ahead of time. And the twist in the first chapter trial was something I really, really didn't expect, and really took me by surprise. And right. I think I liked it so much that, like, and the character is consistently good afterwards too. I mean, so everything about it just made him really, really stick in my mind, and in a way that none of the other characters in the franchise did.
Mm-hmm. And so we're bringing that to Nagito definitely has the only, even if you hate him, and which is, I guess, also understandable because he is such a thorn in the side of everybody else in this game. He is, how do I put this? He is the only character who gets to, through his death, he commits a murder through his own murder, which is a bizarre situation to have to explain. So again, I'm just going to assume that the, you know, this podcast is people already familiar with the franchise. But in Case 5, I think Kadaka, after creating that, said, "I'm never going to be able to create anything that good again," which I don't think is fair. I think that he topped himself in some other regards, depending on how you look at it, depending on the case and what is sticking out about it to you. But Case 5 of Danganronpa 2 is one of the all-time greats, I would say, and because it's infuriating. Because it's absolutely infuriating. I guess I just want to ask, is that among your favorites? It's one of my favorites. Is that among your favorites as well? Or did it just make you angry? Or what are your feelings on Case 5?
It's definitely one of my favorites. I mean, I said that the fourth trial in the first game was my favorite. It's my favorite emotionally, but the fifth trial in the second game is my favorite just by the sheer audacity of it, I guess.
Right.
Yeah, and it's also a great mystery, and the mechanics of it are great, and the eventual like emotional conclusion to it is really good.
And it's also the only this is something Danganronpa didn't necessarily do at the beginning, but over time, definitely in 2 and V3, Kodaka took advantage of the unique situations that fantasy sci-fi ridiculous situations that he had created in order to make mysteries that could only be made in Danganronpa. And I think that because of 2's conceit that it takes place in virtual reality, it is a murder that could only have been committed in virtual reality, because otherwise there is no way for Monokuma to have known who accidentally murdered Nagito. It's only possible if you're not using security cameras, but in fact are like the world itself, if you are the Matrix itself and can know every detail of everything. So it's unsolvable for the kids, but it's not unsolvable for Monokuma. And that interestingly, that dynamic would be flipped in V3, which is fun.
It's an insane case. Like, Naruto really does some really messed up stuff to himself. He's stabbing himself with a knife, and then he stabs his own hand, drops a spear on himself, but the actual thing that murdered
him... That's not enough. I think it's funny that it's not enough. Like, I wonder how long he had to think about, like, I have to make sure that this doesn't actually kill me. He's like, well, I have to aim for my lower intestine so that this won't actually kill me. And, like, it's just insane.
I mean, he would have known, they would have figured it out. So, like, I don't know why he bothered stabbing himself all those times. I guess maybe he hated himself for falling into despair or something.
He hates himself, period, I think. Even before he realized the truth that they were all a bunch of villains in the real world, I think that and that's the fascinating thing about him, is that he finds himself incredibly useless. He thinks his talent is, like, the most useless thing, which it is. Like, Makoto was the most lucky student by virtue of, like, a loophole, but he wasn't really the most... He was just the most optimistic, nice fella. Nagito really has some kind of horrible curse where his talent is literally to be in the most interesting... Luck just means the most fruitful or interesting or eventful circumstances possible, and that can be quite terrible. Like, he catches a deadly disease, but then also has, like, a weird immunity to it, and he's caught in plane crash after plane crash. Like, his talent is just to be interesting, which is, that would drive anyone crazy. So I get why he's fascinating to people, but I find him so repugnant that I'm sort of at odds with with, like, oh, he's interesting, but what a terrible person, you know?
Like, every
time Junko as well.
Yeah, I think that the Russian roulette scene in 2 is also one of the most memorable things I've seen in the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he just Takato doesn't give a single fuck at all. So moving quickly, so I don't want to spend too much time on the spinoffs, but moving quickly through the spinoffs, there was a game, Ultra Despair Girls, and which focuses on Makoto's sister and Toko. And I guess a conclusion to the Hope's Peak Academy story with Danganronpa 3, which is different from V3. We'll get into reasons why that later, but so what are your feelings on these spinoffs? Did you like them? Did you hate them? Were you like, it's okay?
So Ultra Despair Girls, I think was, it was a great story. I didn't care for its gameplay that much because it was generally just boring and badly paced, but
yeah.
Beyond that, I mean, everything that it was trying to do in its story, or at least most things that it was trying to do, it usually succeeded on, and it made Toko from a unlikable person into one of the best characters, which, you know, I couldn't believe that happened.
Right. You know, I just want to say that your feelings on it are actually happened to be exactly mine. My thoughts on Ultra Despair Girls were like, well, if this was a book, I really, really loved it. But it's just very difficult to play. And at the end of it, even though I liked the overall story and the themes and that it added to, you know, Junko is both hope and despair in this instance, because the right thing in this case is not to choose either of them, which would be echoed certainly by future cases. The idea of sometimes the right choice is not to choose anything was kind of interesting, and the way that they approached that was neat. It was mostly just a matter of redeeming Toko, because she is a very, very difficult character. Like, even in the first game, like, the more and more time that they give Toko, the more you think they're gonna, like, flesh her out or redeem her, and they just don't. She's just the butt of every joke in the first game, and I think that Kodaka, as he started writing more elaborate, like, humanized characters, even the worst ones, like Nagito, they're humanized, he was like, I have to do that for Toko. I wonder if maybe he was just thinking, maybe I should do that for her. Because she becomes extremely lovable over the course of Ultra Despair Girls.
I think Ultra Despair Girls is a game I think is really hated in the West for some reason. Well, I know exactly why it's hated. I am kind of ambivalent about it. I don't hate it and I don't really like it. I really like the coming of age aspect of it, and the fact that we have two female protagonists basically going through, like, having a friendship story.
Right.
Yeah. And that's great, and that's written really well. The overall story, the actual plot of the game, is, I can take it or leave it.
It has problems.
It didn't really impress me.
It has problems.
Yeah. I can say that one of the funniest things I've ever seen is I was at one of the Danganronpa stage shows, and before the show started, there were two Japanese girls sitting in front of us, and they spent like 20 minutes flipping through screenshots they had saved on their phones of Toko's delusions of Byakuya. They just had every screenshot of Byakuya, of the Byakuya imagination scene from this game on their phone, and just flipped through it. Uh-huh. Which was really, really funny.
Well, those are, and what's funny is those are played off as a joke, but I think another longstanding strength of the entire franchise is that it's very filthy. It's very sexually, I don't want to say explicit, because, like, it's not explicit, but it's just very naughty,
crude.
I guess. And crude, it's crass, it's crude, and it's, but it's all played for laughs. It's never like, oh, you're supposed to actually be into this, like, it's actually sexy. It's always a joke. But inadvertently, it's also kind of hot. Like, it's kind of like, oh, that is, like, I can't look away. This is triggering the part of my brain that says, like, you know, you're nasty for looking at this. So it achieves both of those things, because you can play it off like, oh, it's a joke. And the same is also true of the dramatic stuff, is Danganronpa doesn't take itself seriously. So it's like, oh, this is silly, but it really does touch you emotionally or in some other inappropriate places when you're watching it, which is interesting to me.
I also think Kodaka tried to touch on some serious subjects in a way that he isn't really prepared to, like violence in the family and rape and stuff
right.
like that. And that doesn't come out very good in this game.
It's a little dodgy. I would say that it's, for my personal reaction, was that I compared to other anime and other games and Japanese games that I have seen attempt to approach those topics in a thoughtful but flip way. I thought it did it better than a lot of those, but it is the weakest. It is the most too far of anything in Danganronpa. So I thought, you know, that I agree with you. Like, it's like, oh, you're usually better at handling these subjects than this. You know, it was a little bit weak on that level. So moving on to three. I think this is the least liked Danganronpa thing. And I'm very curious what the Japanese reaction was to this anime, because it kind of came and went like a wet fart in the U.S. And I was writing, at the time, I was writing about the episodes one by one for ANN, and my reaction went from, this is great, to, well, I didn't hate it, but it had some problems. And I think that my personal reaction to it, since I wrote about every episode individually and came up with, and in the process, when you write about every episode one by one like that, you have no choice but to theorize how it's going to end. And I would say that half of my predictions came true and half of them did not. And it was a rare instance. It was the only time in Danganronpa where, instead of going, oh, well, this fooled me, this surprised me, my predictions were wrong, that's good, it was the first time where I was like, my predictions would have actually made more sense than, unfortunately, what Kodaka came up with. It was the first time that the plot didn't really make sense. And so while my take on 3 is, while that I enjoyed it a lot, the process of watching it, because it had a lot of the great humor, and it had some other, I liked the new cast, I liked Sakakura and Munakata a lot, and I liked that whole story. It kind of came together in the character ways that we expect, but the plot, for once, the masterminded, you know, puzzle box thing that he usually puts together and it holds up, for once, it didn't hold together. It fell apart, and it was like, this plan, this mastermind plan by Tengen, who was not a good mastermind, did not make sense, and it was, you know, it didn't really work. So that, I have a complicated relationship with it, and that I really like a lot of what it was doing, but I have to admit that ultimately the big reveal just didn't work for the first time, I think, in a Danganronpa game. The reveal at the end didn't hold together. Oren, what were your thoughts on it, and what was the Japanese reaction to the show like?
Yeah, so I really liked individual parts of it, but yeah, I think overall it's a weak product. I loved the way it's structured, with going back and forth from the two.
Yeah, that was really great. That was elaborate. Yeah. It was
really cleverly written. I really didn't like the ending. I think having all the Danganronpa 2 characters back alive kind of cheapens that game.
Yeah.
And yeah, the plan didn't make any sense at all. I liked individual parts of it. The first episodes were definitely better, and again, you didn't read Danganronpa 0, but this series expanded on some parts of it in a way that was really satisfying for someone who did read that book. I'm not really sure how the fandom in Japan reacted to it. I haven't seen too much about it. I don't think it took. I definitely don't see anyone cosplaying anyone from 3 or those characters showing up in the fandom.
Well, the most beloved character, as far as I know, the most beloved of the new characters was Sakakura, and you're not liable to see his fans cosplaying him because he's like a million feet tall and a big burly dude. So, you know, and it's mostly female fans, I think. So,
Same sentiment. Like, it's the main problem that I have with Danganronpa 3 would be the despair arc, like most of the second half of the despair arc, because it just attempts to, like, not understand the remnants of despair. It's just trying to erase them of any kind of guilt at all for any of their actions that you believe that they did in Danganronpa 2.
Yeah, that is the unkindest cut, I would say, is that, like, you can kind of forgive, all right, Tengen's plan doesn't make sense, but emotionally I get what it meant to, I don't remember his name, but the ultimate animator, like...
Mitarai.
His story was emotionally meaningful, and I got that, it's just that the plan kind of fell apart, but you can forgive that, but you can't quite forgive mass brainwashing these characters that were obviously written in the second game to have individual, like, motives and ways of coming across to despair and, like, you know, origin stories, as it were. Like, the whole Twilight Syndrome murder case thing is constructed originally to hint that these characters had these sort of individual comings to a place of despair. For Fuyuhiko, it was the death of his sister and all this other stuff. And so having that negated because they just needed to, because there was no way that they could get through this in a more individualized way, does feel cheap. It doesn't quite make sense. And also, just on an aesthetic level, we know supposedly that these characters are supposed to be horrible, rotting Frankenstein's monsters made out of Junko parts, which is distressing and great. It's really upsetting and disgusting and wonderful, and I wanted to see that. But they don't do that. They literally only give Nagito Junko's arm because that was the only thing that they couldn't retcon, because we saw it. We saw it for a fact. We saw it in the game, so they had to depict that. But because I guess they never showed the other characters, they're just hoping that you forgot about that, and they just show them as normal people. And that, you know, that dog doesn't hunt, I guess.
I mean, would you really want to see Mikan with Junko's uterus, or?
Yeah, well, I mean, you wouldn't see that. You wouldn't. See
I know
that.
You wouldn't be able to see it, but you'd see scars or something from it.
She's wearing a dress, you know.
It's true. But I think also in the blame, I think the worst of it would probably be of Izuru Kamakura, because he doesn't do anything. Whereas in Danganronpa 2, you're meant to believe that he's he kills everything that bores him, and he is just a horrible mass murderer.
Yeah, and it's well, the way that the second game framed it was you are the mastermind, the player character is the mastermind, and the Junko AI is kind of here to talk for Junko, but she wouldn't exist if it wasn't for Izuru finding the old alter ego files, copying them, turning himself in, all that stuff. He's the mastermind. Mm-hmm. And so taking that away from him did feel... It felt like a lot of stuff written in a hurry in order to get this completed, because Kodaka was working on B3 at the same time, so that's interesting.
B3 was definitely a story he was more interested in writing, at least I think. Yeah.
So let's just move on. Let's rip the Band-Aid off and talk about V3. So this game is controversial, and it's controversial for a lot of reasons. I'm just gonna blow through them right up front. So it starts with a fake out where the protagonist that you think you're playing, you're like, oh, Danganronpa's first female protagonist. Nope. She's immediately, in the first case, offed in a sort of a trick on the audience as the first murderer, and then you get to play Shuichi, who is hiding his secret protagonist, Ahoge, under his hat. And then it only gets more and more, a series of more and more betrayals from there. Case 5, we learn that we seem to have jumped the gun and learned the true, big twist early in Case 5, but then that can't be the case. And then in Case 6, everything goes to hell, and it's just a matter of the theme of the game is lies. And you find out that basically at every stage of every case in the game, even when you thought you had it right and the game rewarded you for having solved the case right, you were often being lied to. And so this is a fascinating conceit for a game, one that, because it's 40 hours to get through, angered a lot of players. And so I wanted to know, talking not just what you thought of how it was written, but emotionally, just speaking about how you felt while you were in the depths of Case 6, just watching it happen, how you felt about what you were playing, and whether it was disgust or intrigue, or, you know, what was your reaction to what the game was kind of saying to your face, and just very intense things. Oren, how about you?
You'll also have to remember I played this game almost a year ago, so my memory is a little less.
That's fine.
Chapter 6, I think it was more emotionally disturbed by the chapter 1 twist, actually, than the chapter 6 one. Chapter 6 is right up my alley. I love meta stuff in stories. I like this kind of twist. I was playing it. I had a huge smile on my face the entire time, actually. Mm-hmm. And I kind of understand where it's going, because I am not the kind of player who plays these games to see the gruesome death scenes and waiting for characters to die. But I definitely know the people who play that game for those reasons. And And yeah, I definitely see how Kodaka was kind of annoyed with them and wanted to write something about it, even though it would alienate some of the player base. There was a lot of anger about this game from the Japanese side as well, right after release. I remember people especially thinking he was trying to insult people who like to cosplay.
That's interesting. I haven't heard that angle from the English-speaking side.
That was a big part of the reason people didn't like it in Japan. He thought it was insulting cosplayers, so they're saying cosplay doesn't have any value to it. But I think people came around to it. I see more positive reactions to it right now in Japan than immediately after it was released.
Well, I feel that's a similar thing over here, although I think people disliked it for different reasons over here. The reaction was more... So this is actually a big thing with nerds, English-speaking nerds, is an accusation of pretension anytime an author, through their work, tries to talk about their work. They're like, you know, you're here to entertain us. This is pretentious to talk about your legacy in a game like this. That's not what I want to hear. Stop trying to make this relevant to reality is usually the argument. And so that was definitely the biggest kind of backlash that I saw. But I was in a unique position having played this game in that I definitely wasn't spoiled for it at all because I was playing it 2 weeks before it came out in English for review. So I was blowing through it and I was taking notes the entire time. And the biggest note that I took that was as a negative. There was a lot of positive. I was largely enjoying what I was playing, but the funniest thing to me about this game is that the biggest negative that I had written down was characters are not as complex and human and like relatable as they were in the first two games. Like, how can you relate to someone like Kurumi? Like, it doesn't seem possible, right? Like, it's just so outlandish. Like, this maid is the prime minister and they have this something something. And Kokichi is fascinating, but he's also like kind of deliberately inhuman to some extent until I think, in my personal opinion, by the end of Case 5, I thought Kokichi was one of the most human characters, but it just took a long time to get there. But that's kind of the way it went with V3, is a lot of its characters were more outlandish. Somebody like Ryoma, like he's basically an anime stereotype. Kaito is basically Kamina from Gurren Lagann. It was just like, these are all really over-the-top anime stereotypes, and I'm used to it being more relatable than that. And then when I got to the end of V3, and I realized that these were basically all like original character cosplays proposed by contestants in a reality show, I had to cross off that negative. I had to like go, oh, I guess this isn't relevant anymore because it was written that way on purpose. You were supposed to be like, oh, this is somebody's pics of original character, you know, that they've constructed. Like, it's supposed to be that ridiculous and shallow. And I was like, oh, well, I don't know how to think of it anymore. But like the game takes you through that many layers of like reevaluating what you thought of it, because it's like, this isn't the story, this is the story. No, this isn't the story, this is the story. And so, you know, I can see why that could be overwhelming for people, especially in the final rhythm time fight, where you're fighting Nico Nico comets, basically. Yep. That, which is...
They're telling you, like, that they don't want this ending.
Yeah,
they're telling you to go fuck off.
The nerve of that. Yeah. Which is galling to me. Like, I was like, that's raw. Like, I can't imagine how fucked up that must be to play for the Japanese players, let alone the English speakers. But, and I was, because it took a very long time to get through it, I was experiencing all of this at about 3 or 4 a.m., so I wasn't sure if what I was seeing was actually real. I was like, am I hallucinating this ending? It's possible, I guess. As time has gone on, I'd warmed to it more. I'd warmed to what it was doing meta-fictionally a lot more. And I found that... I don't know if this was your experience, Oren and Sam, but like when I first played through it, when I got through the end, I didn't know if those characters' stories would mean anything. Now that I knew it was all a lie, that it was all a reality show put on for assholes, I didn't know if I would actually... find those characters' stories meaningful again. like, if I tried to play case one or case two or case three or case four, which is really sad, like, would I actually care that Gonta was, you know, was dying? Or would I actually care that, like, Tenko gave her life to protect, shit, I forgot her name, Major.
Himiko Yumeno.
Himiko! Look, there's a lot of, I'm trying to remember 60 names at
once. Yeah, there's 60 characters with weird-ass names.
Yeah.
It's fine.
But would I actually care that Tenko gave her life to protect Himiko? Or would I go, this is a bunch of lies, these aren't even who they are, these are like dumb edgelord teens that wanted to be their Pixiv characters in a killing game and got their wish. Like, would I care anymore? And the fact of the matter is, with some time and distance, I did. When I came back to it, I was like, I did care. I was like, oh, this is real to me. These characters, as Shuichi, like, in his impassioned speech says, he's like, this is real. This is my life to me. Like, the people who died and the people that they were, even if it seems silly to you or over the top, and it certainly was, they were real. And I thought that that was valid, and I thought that that was moving. But it took me a while to get there, so I can understand, like, you kind of have to go in, like, layers with how you react to the game, which is fascinating. Like, that's, to me, that's a mark of strong writing, that you have, like, different reactions every time you come back to it. It may feel different. I may feel differently if I go back a third time. You know, who knows?
It kind of, for me, like, I kind of went away with it with another layer of appreciation for the character's emotions, because it's, they not only are, like, their ridiculous situations and personalities, like, being the Prime Minister, like, they force themselves into those own delusions and believing that is their reality. So, like, it's interesting to, like, think about, like, how they compromise their own emotional state and lives to be on this reality show. I don't know. It left a more relatable thing to me, just, like, you know, in fandom. You hear people say things like, oh yeah, what would be your, like, Danganronpa execution? But, like, you see in Shuichi's audition video, you see him come up with, like, his own execution for if he gets caught murdering someone.
Yeah.
Like,
it's bizarre.
Yeah.
And Oren, I wanted to ask you about, like, so I had to explain, I live streamed the third game for an audience, and to some extent a lot of them were like, well, wouldn't this be illegal? So I wanted to know if you have any experience, like, watching, like, late night Japanese TV programs, like, if you've seen, like, there's a lot of prank reality style programming in Japan, or at least there was several years ago. I don't know if it's the same now, it may or may not be, but if you saw parallels to Japan, sort of like, you sign a waiver a week in advance, but then we'll prank you later in the week, sort of schlock late night TV programming that's on. If you saw any parallels to that in V3 or not.
No, I don't think there's really anything like that, but I do see a lot of stories like that in Japanese fiction. It's not the first time we've seen like reality show like Death Games in Japanese stories. But yeah, I don't think it was trying to be realistic in any sort of way. I mean, this game takes place like a long time in the future, apparently, and it is kind of ridiculous, but that's not the point. It's not supposed to be realistic. It's supposed to make you think about the nature of fiction and the Danganronpa franchise itself and these kind of things. It's not going for realism, and it's not even going to making a lot of sense, I think, in the end. If you think about it too much, there are things that doesn't make sense, and the game even references that. It says, maybe this is not actually what's really happening. We don't really know.
Yeah, I think it's best, again, every time that they go, okay, explain this more, I'm like, oh, I wish they hadn't, as with three kind of over-explaining two. But I think that those dialogue passages you were talking about were maybe trying to imply that the kids didn't know that they would actually be killing each other. Like, maybe they thought the audition was to play that character, like, acting it out. But they don't say directly, but it is a matter of, like, trying to plant that seed of doubt in your mind. Like, even though this is ludicrous, maybe it wasn't as ludicrous as, I lost her name, I forgot her name again, as the ultimate cosplayer said that it was.
Tsumugi.
Tsumugi.
Chime
Tsumugi.
In. It's They're garble names, all of them.
Yeah. Well, after you've been talking for an hour about it, the names start to bleed over in your head. But yeah.
I was relieved when I got to the sixth episode that I was really disappointed when they revealed the Danganronpa connection in the fifth episode. The ridiculous continuation of the Hope Speak story. I was really disappointed at that point, and I was so relieved when they basically turned it on its head in the sixth episode.
It feels like such a stretch. It wasn't relevant even at all before.
And not just a stretch, but almost the opposite of that, where it seemed too obvious. It was like, this is the first fanfic that somebody would write about Danganronpa in the future. Like, surely this can't be the answer. And I wasn't on pins and needles about it as much because it was being revealed by Kokichi, who I knew had to be full of shit. So I was like, well, this can't be real. Like, I don't know what the reality is, but we cannot be actually on a spaceship and the only living humans left. That has to be a lie, because Kokichi said it, and this is case five. So I was, I wasn't as worried. It was still a very shocking scene because of the way that the pacing is perfect, the music is great, the art, is really evocative. So I was still, really upset by it, but I was like, it can't be true. And unfortunately it wasn't.
And also, in just the writing itself, up until that point, they didn't talk about, hope or despair or any of that stuff.
I really liked, actually.
Those, big themes of the franchise were just not present in V3. But then after that, they started saying it all the time. And it almost, in an eyebrow-raising kind of way.
Can we say, okay, so worst way to go. Nagito in Danganronpa 2 or Kokichi in Danganronpa V3. What's worse?
Kokichi is definitely really more painful.
I'm not sure. Is it was the poison that Nagito breathed in painless, or is it worse to be popped like a balloon in immense pain for 0.1 seconds, or is it worse to prolong it leading up to that? He got shot. He got shot with a crossbow. He was already dying of poisoning. So
yeah, he might have had
just bad all around.
I mean, he could have had Kaito slit his throat or something, or snap his neck, something to make it less bad. But he didn't.
Well, no, that would negate the unsolvable murder thing.
Well, yeah, but they wouldn't have cameras anyway, so they wouldn't know.
Yeah, I guess that's true. But
it would it'd be fine. But unfortunately,
he has to put Kaito's body under the thing. He has to show clear. They can't find a body. Is the point?
That's fair. I would probably Nagito. I would probably take Nagito's death over Kokichi's. But I
kind of would too. I don't know why. It's something about leaving behind nothing but jelly is just so stressing.
It's really upsetting.
Yeah, me too. I guess.
Right? If you had to pick, it's a rock and a hard place.
Sit around stabbing yourself for an hour and then sustain a heavy lance above yourself and then inhale poison that might kill you instantly.
It's real bad. No matter what you go with, it's real bad. All right. Well, I think we're ready to move on to Twitter questions here. So we're just going to go around the horn with the questions that people have sent in. Shrimp Evan now asks, if they said they were planning it, what part of the V3 universe would you want to be expanded on? What kind of story would you want to be told in the V3 universe, if anything? Sam?
I guess I'd want to see more about how Danganronpa is... I guess, what was the reaction of the people after that story was finished? Did it actually, leave an impact? You would hope that it did, but...
Right. It end the franchise? For all we know, they rebooted it, 2 years later, after Tsumugi was thoroughly scrubbed off the side of the sidewalk.
Yeah, I'm not sure I want to really see any of that. I'm not sure we should see any of that. It's supposed to be kept vague. I will probably want to see some of the earlier games reference. I really want to see what Final Danganronpa what was it, 5?
Yeah, also maybe okay. Danganronpa 25, which apparently is the best in the franchise.
Yeah.
Right, there was a comment that said 25 was the best, and it's all downhill from there, and I'm like, well, I want to see 25 then.
Yeah.
That actually, so for my answer, like I agree that I don't really want to see a whole lot more of that universe. I think I prefer it when they keep it vague. But the only thing I want to see, I really want to see like a light novel or something written that is just a rundown of all the characters' audition tapes. That's what I want. I want to see all the characters' audition tapes for the show. I want to know exactly kind of what they were like beforehand and how similar or not similar. Like my personal theory is that Tenko's submission was like she comes from a small town and she's a really big fan of Danganronpa. But she doesn't know any other girls that are fans of Danganronpa, and she really wanted to be a part of the show that she, so that she could meet other girls, other cute girls who are big fans of Danganronpa. So that's my theory for Tenko, and I have like theories for all of them. You know, and so I would like to see a novel written in that style.
I would like to see that also, maybe just like a brief description of what their lives were like before they went to an audition, but yeah, give like a day in their lives.
Okay, so that leads us to our next question. We've Nusfermatu asks, we gotta have a lot of Halloween names on Twitter this time of year. We've established that season 25 was the best. At what point did you realize that the franchise was going downhill? So this is a hypothetical question about... well, for me, in season 38, when they had two Junkos at once, that was when I thought, you know, it's all over. Well, maybe I just won't come back.
Yeah, season 40 had an all Junko cast.
Right, and that was pretty, pretty played out.
Yeah, that was the worst.
At that point, it became really clear that they had shot like season 39 and 40 at the same time because there was no Junko in 39, and then there were like 12 in 40, and it was just too much.
Yep.
It was like, all right, they're just trying to milk this dry, so. Sam, anything?
I'm sorry. Can't come up with something on the spot.
You know, it's a lot to remember. There were
53 seasons.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Not even counting all the spinoffs like Ultra Despair Girls.
Yeah. Like, well, also there was that Ultra Despair Girls too. So apparently, yeah,
apparently
it will come out.
Making it.
It will come out. It will just come out after Danganronpa 53 does in this world.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's where they fight Monaka in space.
Oh. I see.
On her way to Jupiter to start. She's going to start a new killing game on Jupiter. And you have to stop her, and that's the plot. All right, so Catherine asks, do you have a favorite or and least favorite case across the entire franchise? So favorite and least favorite. Anybody off the top of your head? No, you can jump in.
I already said my favorite was the fourth one in the first game. Let's see what my least favorite is. That's really tough. I mean, I don't like the really easy cases, so but that's just because mechanically there's no challenge in them. So, like, the first case in the first game. But I do like the story they're telling, so...
Right.
I'm not sure.
My favorite case, I'd have to actually have to think about, but I know, actually, my least favorite case right off the top of my head, and that is definitely the second case in V3. Because unlike basically every other case in the entire franchise, it doesn't really have an emotional payoff for me. I didn't feel anything for Kirumi or Ryoma. Ryoma was too, I know that, Sam will be very disappointed.
I'm fine.
Ryoma.
I like Ryoma a lot, but he doesn't stick around long enough to actually have much of an impact or weight. Mm-hmm.
Well, and so the reveal that Ryoma really was as alone as he thought, and Kirumi was doing this in order to protect like the entire populace. It wasn't something that was relatable to me. So, I thought, oh, and on top of this, I thought that the mystery was really easy to solve, but it took forever to get through. Basically, you knew how it was done, so the majority of the case was spent on focusing on the alibis of everyone and whether or not they could have done it matching up the time. And frankly, going through like 15 people's alibis and talking about times of day is really boring.
It was badly paced, and they spent a lot of time wasting on those details that ended up not mattering at all.
Yeah. And it was like, I know it was what he was trying to do, which is another like misdirection type thing. And there were some good moments, like Miu's exhibitionism and the reveal of Maki's real talent at the end. Like, it certainly wasn't a dud, but it would be my least favorite. For favorite, I kind of have to think. I have to exclude all of the endgame stuff, I guess. But like, if I didn't do that, then I would say the end of Danganronpa 2 is my favorite. Because while V3 had, I guess, a stronger written end, the pacing of it wasn't pitch perfect. The pacing of the end of Danganronpa 2 and the way that reveals are stacked and the way that they pull out and show you the monoliths inside the VR and Hajime has to test to destroy all the other versions of himself, and like the pacing of that was just like chef's kiss. It was just it was really good. It was perfect. So I guess, yeah, tentatively I will say, like, even though it's not a murder, the last case, the graduation segment of Danganronpa 2 is my favorite. What about you, Sam?
For favorite case, I would probably say maybe case 5 in Danganronpa 2. Just it's very emotionally, like, just like out of all the characters to get killed, Nagito takes down everyone's favorite, like, innocent Chiaki. And it's also revealed that she's the traitor and everything. All the mysteries are getting answered, but you didn't want to find out the answer at all. And then you had to see her get executed, and it's terrible.
Yeah. It's quite awful.
But also just Nagito's impossible way of death is interesting to figure out. Mm-hmm. Like, even if you could figure out, like, some details of it, like, the absolute insanity of his plan doesn't come together until the very end. Mm-hmm. And I enjoy Danganronpa when it is being wacky and insane.
So a combo question from Blake Schwartz and also Nosferatu. We'll start with the simpler side first, which is the best player character, which is the most interesting or your personal favorite player character. I think it's Shuichi. I think absolutely it's got to be Shuichi for me. What about you guys?
I really like Kaede, actually. I think I like her.
Well,
I like her more than Shuichi. I love the twist in the first episode of V3, but I don't like the character switch. I wish we had a character like Kaede for longer.
Yeah.
Well, when you switch... Go. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think she's probably my favorite.
When it switches to Shuichi, I was incredibly immediately like, oh, I don't want to play as this guy. He's a weenie.
Same. Yeah, same. Well, I should say, like, I was also really disappointed at first when Kaede went down, but, like, he grew on it, and I think... you know, it was immediately disappointing, and the fact that I liked him by the end is kind of a testament to his growth as a character.
Yeah, he becomes less whiny, and he becomes more confident in himself, and yeah, I think that he's also probably the best protagonist, because in Danganronpa 1, Makoto's just a piece of wood. He's there. Yeah. He's there for you to feel, insert yourself, and Hajime is not much better. Hajime's better, but still, I feel like Shuichi has maybe the most. Once again, like, it builds
Hajime's
on
payoff. Mm. Hajime's payoff all comes in 11th hour, and I think it's a really good payoff. But it's like the lead up to that wasn't necessarily any more interesting than Makoto. It's just that ending bit is so engrossing. But yeah, like, Shuichi is like the whole way through. You're watching things like you're watching him slowly become a stronger person, which is cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Shuichi has the most gradual character development. Definitely.
All right. So, and much more difficult question: favorite characters overall, just your favorites. I'm definitely going to say Junko and most of the 2 cast, and Kokichi. You know, I'll throw in Kokichi as well. I say Junko, Kokichi, and the rest of the cast of 2.
Yeah, this is really difficult. I actually really liked Fukawa, Toko Fukawa, so even in the first game, even before Ultra Despair Girls. Mostly, I think it's a large part of it is a Japanese voice actress. I really like the performance. But yeah, definitely, as far as interesting characters go, Kokichi is definitely one in V3. Let's see who else.
Well, you have one from 1 and one from V3, so how about one from 2? Nagito, I guess?
Yeah, Nagito is the most interesting character. If we're not going for like a deep emotional feelings about a character, but just characters we liked, I obviously really liked Gundam, who's just fun.
Oh, yeah.
He's a fun character. Probably the most fun in the entire series.
The fun thing about him is that his first name is Gundam and his last name is... And I don't think English speakers maybe appreciate this as much, but his last name is Tanaka,
yeah,
which is
exactly.
Basically... It's like the Jones or Johnson of Japan. It's just like the most like bland name. So it really fully cements that this is like a hardcore chuny character, because Tanaka is probably for sure his last name, but Gundam, maybe he made that one up.
And again, it's an amazing Japanese performance.
To speak on behalf of the dub a little bit, the English dub, like I think it's a little bit weaker in the first game, but the English dub for 2 and V3 is really strong, and the guy who plays Gundam does a fantastic job. I think no matter which language track you go with, you can't go wrong, but I would say just sample both. Listen to both if you have the game in both languages, because they're the actors are having a lot of fun in both cases.
The dub is great no matter what language you're listening to. Also, for favorite characters, in the first game, I'd probably say like Kyoko and Sakura were high up for favorite characters in that. I enjoyed Kyoko just being like the smartest character in the room and constantly figuring out everything. She was like 8 steps ahead of you. But Makoto, definitely.
I thought that was a neat... That was a neat aspect that you as the protagonist aren't really... Kyoko's not beholden to you necessarily. Like, she's not your sidekick helping you figure stuff out. It's just that your strength isn't coming from your deduction abilities necessarily. It's just coming from your ability to bring the group together. But she's, like, actually solving the mystery for you a lot of times. The reason for that is that it allows the game to hold on to reveals longer if need be. Because if it just showed you all the evidence you needed to solve it ahead of time, then that would perhaps kill the pacing. And in fact it does in V3 sometimes, because you don't have necessarily that detective character who's holding on to things behind your back. Once Kaede's gone, and you have like Kaito as a sidekick, like you have in case 2, you have everything you need to solve the mystery, and none of it is, you're just trying to figure out who, but you know how, and so that kills the pacing a little bit. But in previous games with Nagito and Kyoko, they're able to hold stuff back, which is helpful, I think.
And Danganronpa 2, Nagito was high up for favorite characters in that. Also Gundam, because he's a lot of fun. He's just this weird nerd that takes himself way too seriously.
Bless his heart. And he gets a love interest. I think he and Sonya's chemistry is really sweet.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Chiaki, she's kind of an easy character to like, but I don't know. I thought that she was... Her entire arc was pretty relatable and enjoyable. She didn't have any personality, then she started to grow into the group, and she eventually became like the person who was figuring everything out for the group.
Right. She's like a learning program, so it's like you're watching her like sort of become closer to a human, and then she gets deleted. But...
Yeah. and in V3, I liked Kokichi because he's the worst. Kibo was pretty great. Like, I enjoyed his useless... He was a completely useless robot in every way.
Right. He has the strength of an 80-year-old man. It's not very useful.
And, weirdly, I didn't think I would like her at all going into the game, but I liked Himiko a lot. Yeah. Honestly, I feel bad for her, because nothing ever went right for her.
No, yeah.
She tried to do a magic show.
She survived.
Yeah, she lived.
Yeah, that's right. She survived. That
she didn't seem to want to.
She survived with the horrible PTSD that came from a false life, so that's, something.
Yeah.
But
I guess that would be the end of the... Also Miyu, but the weird folk.
What was a fan reaction like to Miyu? Because in the West, people seem to like her a lot.
Yeah, in Japan, people seem to like her, too. There's an interview with Kodaka, who said that he was really surprised because that's the character he tried to write... So she would come at the bottom of the popularity polls. But people really seem to like her.
It's hard to... I mean, that's hard to do, because if you write a character to make a strong emotional impression, you can't you can't determine what that emotional impression will be, and it may be more positive. You know, if you write one that not to leave almost any impression, like Samugi, they're more likely to rank lower, you know.
Yeah.
Okay, so our last question comes from Mex Rage, who asks, with Nier Automata, that's how you pronounce it, I think, Nier Automata and Danganronpa V3 having such meta narrative elements and conclusions. They even have, like, I believe they have a similar end game thing where the screen goes black and it starts talking to you directly. Do you think that this may become a trend in Japanese games?
I don't think it's such a new thing. I mean, it's very blatant in Nier and in Danganronpa, but you can look back at Metal Gear Solid and things like Higurashi and many, many other examples. I think Japan likes meta stuff. They do it a lot.
I think maybe in this year we were just fortunate to have like two kind of high profile, maybe. Like wacky, just absolutely insane, going over the top with it and doing it really well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But is it a trend? I think it might already be a trend, and who knows? Maybe we'll get more. It's enjoyable, yeah. So hopefully.
All right. So, I wanted to thank you guys very much for coming on the podcast. We had a great time talking about Danganronpa and. If you had any final thoughts, I just thought, anything, any last thing you want to say about what Danganronpa means to you as a franchise, what you hope to see more of, what do you think, Sam?
It's definitely one of my favorite, like, video game franchises, even if I hate the video game parts of it, generally. But they're not very well-constructed games in terms of gameplay.
I thought V3 was pretty solid. Game feel, but then even then you have the
Psych Taxi is boring. That aside,
is boring.
I don't know. They've always continuously left me more and more impressed and surprised, and then excluding the spinoffs. I look forward to being more surprised in the future of whatever comes out of that group, even if it's not Danganronpa, or maybe it is Danganronpa. Who the hell knows?
So Danganronpa was definitely a huge part of my life when I was translating it, in the year I was translating it. And even after, I kept being a very big fan of it. Just looking around me right now, I can see probably like 6 or 7 different pieces of Danganronpa merchandise. I'm not sure what I want to see next. It's really difficult to follow up on this game. I'm not sure if they can. I think the best bet is to do like weird spin-off stuff. Like Kodaka keeps saying how he wants to see a fighting game with the Danganronpa characters. That might work. It's still
that would be great. I would love that.
It's still Spike Chunsoft's biggest franchise. So just business-wise, they have to do something. We're also coming up on its 10th anniversary in a couple of years. So they will probably do something for that. But how do you follow up on the ending to V3? I'm not sure.
I would love to see a fighting game in a similar style. It would actually be easier, I think, than this other property to do. But like, I would love to see a Danganronpa game in a similar style to Dragon Ball Z Fighters, with obviously a little less animation because there's a little less, so more elaborate drawings and less animation. But I definitely want to see like the it would be fun if they're 2D and when they turn around you could see their like punched up cardboard sides. Like that would be a great fighting game. I want to play that for sure. But yeah, I just hope that the only thing I want to see in the future, Danganronpa means a lot to me. I really love its aesthetic. It just kind of speaks to me. I don't know exactly why, but I love revisiting it over and over. And I just want to be not only surprised by it, but in light of V3, I want only what Kodaka wants to make. Like I don't want to ever see a thing where clearly he was like sort of contractually obligated to do it, or he just like wasn't really feeling it, or it's just like Danganronpa but somebody else is making it. Like I think it's 100% dependent on his voice and his style, so I only want to see more if it comes from him, and if he's tired of it then I want to see him do something else. But I always kind of want to be like I want it to be what he wants to express. So, especially after V3, which was basically the whole ending to that game, is like, this will become meaningless if it is not expressing something and if it's only murder. Like, you know, that it can't be that. And yeah, so that's my hopes for the franchise. And thank you guys so much for joining me. And hopefully we'll get more crazy Danganronpa stuff in the future.
Yeah, thank you. It was fun.
Thanks.
Take care, guys.
Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to Jacob's guests, Oren and Sam, for dropping by. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play Music, Stitcher, Radio, YouTube, all that shit. You know how to do it. Like and subscribe. Leave us a rating and review. We'd appreciate it. See y'all next week.